History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Hey guys, good morning. The United States military unleashing powerful strikes overnight against the Iranian regime. President Trump exclusively telling Fox News in a phone call from the Situation Room that 49 Tomahawk missiles were launched at targets across Iran. One of those targets just 40 miles outside the capital of Tehran. We also know that other targets were hit along the southwestern coast of the country. The president says we hit them very hard tonight and described the strikes as violent and vicious. President Trump also giving some new insight into the behind the scenes of what was taking place during those hours. He was in the Situation Room with Vice President J.D. Vance and Special Envoys Kushner and Witkoff when the phone rang. It was the Iranians, President Trump says, on the other end, calling on him to stop the bombing. He said he'll stop the bombing if they sign the agreement that is currently on the table. And again, the latest information that we have, the Iranians did respond to those U.S. strikes overnight against their country. They launched ballistic missiles and drones at Gulf countries, including Bahrain and Kuwait, and even as far as Jordan. The Jordanian army says they shot down 20 incoming ballistic missiles. Guys?
All right, that's a report from Trey Yingst of Fox News. And my question for you is, if you listen to that whole report there, about a minute long, when do you think that report was from? Because, you know, the answer could be a month ago, could be a day ago, could have been last night, could have been at the very beginning. You don't know. And that's my point of playing it. The answer is that was actually from Thursday night. Oh, no, it was from Thursday morning. So it would have been Thursday or Wednesday night, Iran time. But that's kind of the ongoing saga is, yes, we'll bomb them. And then they say, we'll work with you. And we say, okay. And then they don't quite finalize a deal. And then we wait because they're close. And they extend things. And then we have to bomb them again. And they go, oh, we'll work with you. And everybody can see that. And the thing is, the president can see that. He's not getting played. He knows that that's what's happening. He even said it that same day. He goes, yeah, they're trying to play us. And we know it. And here's what we're doing. And so he kind of gives you the same message over and over, which is, well, we're going to bomb the hell out of them if they don't comply. And then they kind of comply, but not really. And it extends it out. And we keep talking about diplomatic efforts and blah, 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 blah. And so it looks like the president is getting played. It looks like we are by them. The only thing is, how are we getting played? That they're just extending it? But what are they gaining? They're not getting anything. In fact, they're getting worse. And we know that. So we are actually okay with them signing an agreement. We're okay with bombing them. Or we're okay with waiting. We really are okay in any of these circumstances. The only leverage they have over us is gas prices. But guess what? Even that is going away. And if you listen to Jim Talent on the Annie Fry show this week, he gave an absolutely fantastic analysis of this, of why we're okay with waiting. Because we could, according to him, open the Strait of Hormuz at any time. It would take about 6 weeks for us to fully open it and get ships really rolling through there again. But we could do it. So the question is, why didn't we do it? Why didn't we do it 6 weeks ago? It'd be open right now. Gas prices would be lower. Well, because we know that it's actually in our best interest long term and Iran's worst interest long term for the Strait of Hormuz to not even be a thing. So all of the Middle East right now and many other countries are figuring out how to reroute oil around Iran so that Iran actually won't be a player in this game at all. So literally the only way that they are able to exist right now and fund terror, which they're still doing. I mean, you see, oh, they attacked Lebanon. They attacked here and there. Well, that's because of terror cells. That's not Iran necessarily being able to pull off these amazing shots. They can't hit us at all. So they're just hitting random countries that are kind of working with us, but not even really. They're not like hitting Israel either. You know, it's not like they're hitting our full allies. They're shooting rockets at anybody because they're flailing. They have no future. And I don't even know if they know it. You know, the leadership there has been in leadership for about 4 weeks. So do they actually have any idea what's happening to their leverage long term? I don't know. And I don't know that they know, and we do. So I'm just saying that because while I played that Trey Yinks clip to show that, look, nothing is changing, I also want to point out that that might be kind of the long-term strategy, is that we just starve them out of existence. There really would be very little terrorism. I mean, you'd probably have little pockets, but not well-funded terrorism in the Middle East or possibly the world if Iran didn't have money. And that's what we're changing right now. It's kind of a big deal. And when I hear that analysis, it gives me a lot of hope. Because when you hear Trey Yinks, when you see the headlines over and over and over, it makes you a little bit hopeless. Gas is starting to come back down. It's not where it needs to be, but it's starting. Because this economy, this economic shift of the world, they're building pipelines through Saudi Arabia. I mean, they're figuring out how to not have to worry about Iran and the Strait of Hormuz at all ever again. That's happening right now before your eyes. You're watching crude drop every day, or at least generally drop. That's because of that. It's not because Trump comes out and goes, oh, we got a peace deal. The news is over that. That's happened 15 times. In fact, that's the last that we know, is that we're in sort of a peace deal negotiation ceasefire with them again as of Thursday after we bombed them again. So I just wanted to explain and sort of harp on that a little bit before we move on to some other stuff. We have a lot of other stuff in this show. It's going to be really good. We're going to talk about some really local issues next, some St. Louis stuff. But before we do...
Wow, Wiggins America.
All right, it's summer. It's Pride Month. I don't know if you knew that. Probably know that from all the advertisements everywhere. It's hard to avoid. Here are the shifts in what's morally acceptable in the United States. Gallup poll. Now, Gallup, a few years ago, this is a very good polling company, they decided that it had become so difficult to poll presidential elections that they stopped doing presidential elections at all. And so they do a lot more stuff like this. And I really respect that because they said we can't accurately do presidential elections anymore. They have gotten too difficult and they have enough integrity to admit that. So they do opinion polling. And I appreciate that about Gallup. And here is the way the nation views different important social issues. Abortion. Republicans find it acceptable to 18%, Democrats to 73%. Changing one's gender. Dems find it 60% acceptable, Republicans 5% acceptable. So huge gap there. And by the way, this one is probably the most important one. I should have saved it for last because it's shifting rapidly. People are changing their opinion on changing one's gender very, very quickly in the negative, I guess in the positive, in the way that we would say it, but toward not thinking that it's okay to do. Gay or lesbian relations, Democrats 81% say it's fine, Republicans 35% say it's fine. Here's a huge shift. Just 2 to 3 years ago, Republicans said 56% said it was fine. That has dropped to 35% very fast. And you know what? Among this group and all of these topics, actually, all these different notes among social issues, it's the young people in America who lean conservative who have adopted these changes the fastest. And I mean, they've adopted the changes as in they're less accepting of mass social change in the way of abortion, gay marriage, changing gender, doctor-assisted suicide. Republicans are 30% okay with that. Democrats, almost 70%. Sex between teenagers. Democrats, 54%. Republicans, 16%. Sex between an unmarried man and woman. Sex outside of marriage. Democrats, 83%. Republicans, 46%. It is a moral divide that we have in this country. Pornography. Democrats say, yeah, 47% say it's fine. 47%, almost half of Democrats say, yeah, pornography is fine. Republicans, 19%, less than 20%. So I highlight that to say there is a big moral divide in this country. And in general, it's shifting toward more conservative lately, mainly because the young people of America are shifting in that direction. Not all of them, but enough of them that statistically you can see it show up pretty clearly. All right, one other political story before we stop. And it's more data. I love data. As you know this, if you listen to Wiggins America for any amount of time, Democrats are doing very well in swing states, actually in most states, compared to 2024 in the polling. In fact, if you look at statewide polling, for the most part, every swing state, because we're talking about Senate races when you talk about statewide, every swing state has moved considerably toward Democrats. But the question is how much? On average, it's about 8 points that they've moved toward Democrats since 2024, since the last election, the major election. So you're talking about some pretty safe races, usually for Republicans that are wavering. Yes, we're talking about Susan Collins, but she's always at risk. Graham Plattner is a terrible candidate, so I could see her winning that pretty easily, but you just never know if the country has shifted and if Maine has shifted with it. She always tends to buck that trend, though. You're talking about North Carolina. You're talking about, is Wisconsin in there? I know Texas is, and seats, Ohio is really on the bubble, and I'm just doing this from memory. These are seats that should be Republican. Texas probably will be. Ohio is real close right now in polling, even considering these really bad numbers for Republicans. But the thing is, you don't know if that's actually going to be what the electorate does. That's polling. But on average, in an off year for the party in power, you're talking about usually a 4 to 6 point shift, and 8 to 10 point is a pretty big shift. It's possible, but it's not common. But here's the other thing that I want to mention before we run out of time in this segment, this very long segment, and get to some more local issues, is that when you hone in on swing districts, so not just full states, states matter for Senate, districts matter for the House. When you hone in on them, Democrats actually keep losing voters in swing districts. Anywhere where there's party registration, it says trends from the House Republicans' political arm shows that since the last presidential election, so not long, Democrats have continued to bleed voters in more than 24 key House districts, considered battleground seats this year. In most of those seats, Republicans have made gains with registered voters, making those areas more favorable to them ahead of this year's midterm election. Did you hear that? 24 key House districts considered battleground seats this year. And that's pretty high because of gerrymandering. There's probably only about 17 or 18. So they're going beyond that and saying in all of these roughly 20 to 24, Republicans have gained, at least overall. It's another sign of the Democrat Party's deep and ongoing popularity issues since losing the presidential election, says the Republican Party. Of course, that's what they're going to say. But the numbers are real. And it says in 28 congressional districts considered general election battlegrounds, Democrats lost a total of more than 275,000 registered voters, an average around 10,000 voters per district. That's real stuff. So is it possible that Republicans could keep the House? Based on numbers like this, it very much is. Is it possible they could lose the Senate? Yes, it is, although it's unlikely.
Wiggins America.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
We really do have two cities here in St. Louis, and no, I'm not talking about rural versus urban or the city versus the county or the city versus the suburbs for that matter. I'm talking about the actual city of St. Louis. Yeah, there are two different parts of this city, and the first one you know all about. We talk about it all the time. You probably don't live in the city. I mean, if you're listening to the station right now, chances are you probably don't live in the city. Although if you do, welcome. I mean, we're very glad if you live in the city. You should listen to 97.1 because it's a highly concentrated blue area. But if you don't, which you probably don't, there are parts of the city that you don't go to very often. You might go to a Cardinals game. You come right downtown. You might go to a city soccer game, blues game. You might come to a concert downtown if it's the right type of concert, or like a monster truck rally at the Dome or whatever. Stuff like that. You might come for events right downtown. And we've talked many, many times, and we'll continue to, about the problems with the city of St. Louis. We're talking crime. We're talking, you know, even as much as that, we're talking about the like myriad of just drugged out zombie beggars that you have to make your way through if you're coming to downtown St. Louis. And if you're walking past them with your family going to an event, that's uncomfortable because you don't know what they're going to do. And that's the reality of it. I'm not trying to be sensitive about it. I'm telling you that that is what we all think when we walk past drug zombies is, what is this guy going to do? Hopefully nothing. But it makes you not want to come downtown. And all the things that happened during COVID to close businesses, which remained closed. I'm thinking about some restaurants even right here, because we are downtown here as I'm speaking to you. Restaurants right by us that got boarded up during COVID that are gone. A gas station right up the street from me here on Tucker that had been here since I think I was born, or maybe before. It was a little Shell station. Just decided to close up in like 2023. I don't even know why. I think because, well, I didn't go there ever because there were so many homeless people standing there and, you know, just weirdos and stuff and probably drug deals happening, excuse me, that I never went to that gas station. And that's not the gas station's fault unless it's just security. But man, after all that time, that thing closed. I'm thinking about a coffee shop nearby that I used to go to all the time here in the building that was on the other side of this building that we're in, that it was also a little art gallery. You know, they were really trying to make it, and they're gone. They moved to St. Charles, just like everything else has. So that's the side of the city that we talk about a lot, and the bad taxes and the stupid economic policies that they encourage and go through. But what you don't know is that there still is a really good part of the city. And I'm not trying to like do spin here. I'm just saying they coexist. And we know about one, you really don't know about the other because we don't go to those places. So on last Friday night, so a little over a week ago, my kids and I, it was my kids' birthday, and all my three kids have birthdays within 2 weeks of each other. So we kind of celebrated for 2 weeks in a way. And this was kind of the end. This was the last kid's birthday. So we went out to the Del Mar Loop. I won't say which restaurant just because I'm not sure I really want to advertise for them, because they didn't treat us really well, even though we still had a really good time just because we were out there having fun and it was a nice night. I won't say which restaurant because it was not a great restaurant. It wasn't a great restaurant experience, I'll say that. Nice night, though. Really had fun because I was with awesome people, which is my family. And we were all just in a good mood celebrating birthdays and having a nice night. And we decided on the way home from that restaurant. And by the way, I mentioned that it was the Del Mar Loop because it was hopping, man. I mean, there were people all over the place. And some people who I think Cards had played the Reds, so people walking around still from that, you know, just afterwards, just enjoying the nightlife. And did it feel safe? Me, mostly, but there were some weirdos that you had to walk past, and the kids are always weirded out by the weirdos, and so are the adults, and you just have to deal with it if you want to do it. It's one of the reasons that we talked about it just a second ago, that we don't do it as much, but we did, and it was fun, and it was hopping, and it was active. It's really what you think of when you think of a city. St. Louis just doesn't have as many places like that as it used to. Washington Avenue was becoming one of those places, but it never quite got over the hump, or it did for a while, and now it's drifted back. Del Mar Loop still has that somewhat, I think, and certainly on certain days, and it's fun to enjoy. That's the stuff that people like about cities, is that kind of stuff. But then we drove through an area that I just forgot how awesome it is. And maybe you haven't, maybe you do it regularly, but if you don't and you don't live in the city, this is my encouragement to you, is to go to a place like this and really see why people might come to St. Louis, because this is it. It's Forest Park. Forest Park is freaking massive. And I've lived here in St. Louis my whole life. And we drove through that park, and I've been to the zoo, and I've been to the art museum, and I used to work, actually, at the Missouri History Museum for a brief time. So I've been to lots of areas of Forest Park. But there were still parts of it that I had never seen. We have to, and it lots of curving roads, so it's not like a grid that you can kind of figure out. It's not an easy park to navigate because the roads are intentionally windy because they're prettier. And you see more different things. And there are whole big sections and buildings that I didn't even know were there that are gorgeous. We actually parked the car and got out at an area that I had been before, but it had been a long time. The big pool by Art Hill that's, I don't even know if it's really a pool, what you'd call it. It's enormous. It's got several fountains in it. We just walked around it. It was awesome. And were there any weirdos out there? Not really. No. Forest Park may be devoid of weirdos, or mostly devoid of them. And we saw that they're doing Shakespeare in the park, and it's free. Really hard to find parking, but my wife said, oh, we got to do that. And so I think she's going to do that next weekend with my daughter. And it was really nice. And I just thought it was important to point out that those areas do exist. And I'm not just doing this to say, hey, go seek out the nice parts of St. Louis. I'm actually just telling you that if you feel like it, it's actually worth your time to go to some of these places. And there are nice neighborhoods. Now, that doesn't affect us unless you just want to drive around the neighborhood. But there are so many nice old streets with these beautiful houses that it makes you forget that there really are two parts to this city. And it's sad because it doesn't need to be two parts. If you just had lower taxes and you controlled crime, or you just dealt with crime, and you figured out a way to not encourage drug use, you know, because it really affects those people at the bottom. Yes, people at the top can probably handle it. You know, there are people listening right now who probably take drugs that are either illegal or used to be illegal, and you can kind of get through your day. But the people at the bottom can't. You get addicted to drugs, they're on the street. So that all has massive policy implications for people, like they did in Portland. Not to get off of the topic, but in Portland, they legalized basically every drug. And even the far leftist bookstore in Portland realized this was a bad idea because drug usage became rampant. So you got to discourage those things. And my whole point in sharing all of this is to say, we probably shouldn't give up on the city. It feels like that sometimes, but I will say that Kara Spencer seems to be trying. I don't know if she has a lot to do with the roads, but they are replacing a lot of those crappy old roads throughout the city. And just that alone gives you a little bit of a breath of fresh air, like, oh, they're trying. And it feels nice. And maybe we're on the cusp of something here. Maybe. Within 10 years, we'll be able to look back and say, oh yeah, we did kind of bottom out there, but we're trying to come back. I'm not saying we're the next Nashville, Tennessee, or the next Dallas, or whatever. But maybe we can come back, and we're starting to bounce back now. I saw a little evidence of it.
Don't you try to pretend it's my feeling will win and I won't.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm sorry to tell you right now, but this is a sad segment. This is not a happy segment. It's got several stories in it, and they're all sad. And they're not goofy stories. Let's start with Spencer Pratt. This is a sad story. it's actually kind of a make you mad story because California and this LA mayoral race. I actually was, so last week I did my Saturday morning Wiggins America show, was talking about Spencer Pratt and how it's going to be a Pratt summer and all this stuff. By the time we got to Sunday night, that analysis was completely wrong and ridiculous. That's how fast that changed over the weekend. But anyway, now we're to this weekend, and Spencer Pratt is looking like he's not going to be a part of that LA mayoral race at all. Suddenly, we have this this second candidate, the third candidate at first, who is another Democrat, so Karen Bass, and then Rahman and Spencer Pratt. Rahman is this outsider Democrat, sort of, or whatever she's trying to be, who's taken on, wants to take on Karen Bass in the primary. So the top two go on. Now, you probably already know this. Spencer Pratt was one of those, and he's the guy who's the much more Republican, and he wouldn't even say Republican. He's like common sense. We're just trying to get needles out of playgrounds, that kind of guy. He has now fallen below the threshold to be the second candidate, so he wouldn't be on if it ended right now, and it looks like it will be this way. He will not be on the ballot come the general election in November, or is it August? I can't remember. It's one of those. It's in the fall. But anyway, it was going to be a Spencer Pratt summer. Maybe it still will be because this story is so ridiculous. But they just keep counting ballots. I mean, the election was, what, 2 weeks ago? And they just keep counting and just keep counting. And they go, oh, lo and behold, the two Democrats just keep gaining votes. Mainly this other one, because Karen Bass was already going to make it. So this other one, she just keeps gaining. Rahman. I was looking into this a little bit. Elon Musk, who certainly knows statistics and numbers and how to gauge these things, says this is straight up fraud. And one of the main reasons that he's giving for that, so without going into all the analysis, is that Nithya Rahman has even lost her own district. So the district she won to be on the committee, the city council or whatever it's called there, she's not even winning her own district. And yet we're supposed to believe that she, who was polling at about 20 to 23%, is going to end up with 40% of the vote. That's statistically very strange. And so, of course, people are going, this is fraud. This is people waiting until they see the actual totals and then bringing in all the late votes to make who they want win. Obviously, that's what people are saying, because you can do that in California. Amazingly, you can't do that in a lot of places or a lot of states. And you don't have that problem in those states and those places, but you do there in LA. So I'm going to take a different approach here and say, yeah, you can say fraud all you want. You can bring up the statistics. And I think that's very important to do, that we continue to look at that and talk about that. But let's say it's all on the up and up. Hypothetically, let's say there is not any, or at least statistically, any fraudulent votes that actually were a part of this. That it actually was just a very late breaking vote for Rahman, and all these mail-ins are legit, and it's just breaking that way. And that CNN and Dana Bash, who are telling us to not worry about this, that this is correct, that they're actually right. Let's say that, okay? Well, then you need to fix your freaking crappy system that makes everybody distrust it. If you want to have trust in elections and have integrity, and why do people question all the time? Democrats say this. Why do Republicans always question these things? They need to bring evidence. And they need to stop questioning everything all the time. And when they do question it, like Donald Trump did in 2020, we're going to prosecute them. We're going to try to make sure they shut up. One way that you could actually gain people's trust is to change your broken and crappy machine to where it didn't invite those questions. And guess what? There are examples of ways to do that all over the country, and you choose not to do it because maybe you want the fraud. But again, in this scenario that I'm projecting here, you don't want fraud. You are on the up and up, and this election was on the up and up. And I'm going to presume that you, as a Democrat, are also on the up and up, and you want fair elections. Then fix your stupid, crappy system so that people don't have to ask these questions. Look at Florida. Florida can give you the results of their election in one day. One day for one of the most populous states in the entire union. It's actually less than a day most of the time. It's usually by election night. They have something like 98% of their votes all counted, and there's very little question. And if there is a question, then they have a lawsuit and they look at those individual issues. And you know why they're able to count that quick? Because their system's better. It's not just that they're more competent. It's that they run a competent system. Their laws make more sense so that that can happen, so that people can trust it. Because guess what? Democrats still win some elections in Florida. And you know what they don't do when they lose? They don't really question it because they know it's a competent system. LA, you have less population. You are a huge city, but you have less population than the state of Florida, and you can't figure it out for over a month. Did you know that? They don't have to certify their elections in LA until July. The election happened in early June. That's over a month for them to have whatever happen in there. So fix your stupid system so that people don't have to claim that there might be fraud if you think that there isn't fraud, which you keep telling us through your voices in the media. All right. That went longer than I was expecting. So I was going to give you several sad stories, but instead, I'm just going to give you that one sad story, and we'll come back with another sad story. This is not the way to keep people listening. I know that, but it's a good story. So we'll be right back. By it. So my son is 9 years old. I have two sons. A 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and then I have a 12-year-old daughter also who is a twin with the other 12-year-old son. Anyway, this one's about my 9-year-old son. He just turned 9, and he's just a super sweet kid. He's the huggiest kid in the world, and he has an affinity for trades, which I don't understand because I don't. I'm not only bad at doing like labor-type work, I actually sometimes make it worse. Like if I try to build a bookshelf or something, it's not only that I can't do it right, it's that maybe I ruined it so that the next person who comes along who tries to build it can't actually fix it. Like I'm that bad at basically all manual labor. And sometimes I still try because I feel like I'm supposed to and I feel bad that I can't do anything. And then I get really frustrated when I'm in the middle of it because I know, oh, I see where this is going. But anyway, and I'm that way. My wife is actually decent at it, but it's not her trade either. She's a teacher. So I really don't know where my 9-year-old gets this affection for labor and trade work. But I like that he does it because as he gets older, man, we could really use somebody around the house who could do that stuff. So he's got some boy in him, you know, even though he's a very, very huggy, lovey guy. He's got that kind of that boy stuff that he just loves hammers and, you know, things like he just loves tools and things like that. Well, when he was really little, I'd say 4 years old, 5 years old, for Christmas, he told us he wanted one toy. And if you listen to the Annie Fry Show, I've told a part of this story before. He was obsessed, and I guess he saw a commercial somewhere for it, with this thing. This was like a remote control car called Mega Chomp. And Mega Chomp is a shark on a car. Well, it's kind of a car that is a shark. And as you drive it, it moves its jaws up and down like it's going to eat anything in its path. And so my guess is the commercial probably made it look like Mega Chomp was driving through anything like walls and anything that got in its way, and it would just eat through the world, and you could drive it right through all your other toys and it would eat their faces off. And And he thought, this thing is the most incredible toy I've ever seen in my life. And he talked about Megachomp incessantly for 3 months leading into Christmas. And so we would hint, okay, hey, man, we're really hoping you get Megachomp. And I think we were doing Santa at the time. And so we're like, we hope that Santa brings you Megachomp. We really think that he will. We got some good intel that that there's a Megachomp maybe going to be under that tree. And he was so excited. So on Christmas morning, he opens up Megachomp and is like freaking out. Can't believe it. It was a wonderful moment. I think we probably got it on video because we knew it was going to be good. And he didn't even want to open the rest of his presents. He wanted to play with Megachomp so bad. So we got through Christmas and he's like, I got to play with this thing. Open the box. Starts playing with the Megachomp, realizes it is a car that looks like a shark that's jaw goes up and down, and that's it. And it's basically the same as any other car other than the fact that the jaw goes up and down and looks like a shark. And I think he was devastated, as a 4 or 5 year old would be. And it's projecting a lot of emotion onto him, onto this. It's like a little bit ridiculous, but you can imagine being that excited and you're that age and then finding out, oh, the reality is this thing doesn't really do anything. It just drives around. He was very sad. And I told you this is a very sad story, but it gets worse from there. So that was a few years ago. Since then, our basement has just become a Lego nightmare. My 12-year-old and my 6-year-old or my 9-year-old, they just play Legos all the time, and they build these elaborate things, and they build all these guns, and they build Star Wars ships that shoot at each other, and that's what they do. Like, with their spare time, they like reading, they like playing sports, but they love going to the basement and playing Legos. And I figure we're at that age where they're in the middle of it. I'm not going to really harp on them on keeping the basement clean, but it gets a little out of control. And by a little out of control, I mean a lot out of control, because there's all these other toys that are still around from eras past that aren't part of the Lego ecosystem that I don't really know what to do with. So I started trying to clean up the other toys that they've moved. You know, they're older than now. And then I came upon a basket and Megachomp was in it. And Megachomp had not been touched since I think probably Christmas morning 5 years ago. And I saw it in there and I got so sad, because I remember that moment of watching my son in this incredible disappointment and then seeing it again and seeing that every time he's seen that toy, he probably feels that same way. And I felt bad. I felt really bad for not only him, but for every disappointment that everybody's ever had that's like that, that it just sort of represented that. And so I saw it sitting there and thought, oh man, I can't throw it away though. I can't throw it away. It was what he wanted so bad. And he doesn't care about it at all now. He never uses it or drives it. He's past that anyway. But I still couldn't throw it away. So I told him, hey, buddy, you have to start throwing away some of these old toys. And this is separate. I said, River, you got to take a bag, pick some of these old toys that are kids' toys that you don't play with anymore, and put them in this trash bag, and I'm going to throw them away. So I thought, well, he won't touch Megachomp because that's still, you know, it's still a car. I mean, it still can do things, but he won't touch that. So he did. He went through the whole basement and grabbed whatever he was going to grab. I didn't watch him. I just let him do it, and I went upstairs and whatever. Came back the next day and grabbed that trash bag, and I was going to throw it away, and I thought, oh, good. He actually put some things in this trash bag and get rid of some old toys. I opened the trash bag, and there's basically only one thing in it. There were some old balloons and stuff, but actual trash, and there was one actual toy in it. You know where this is going. Megachomp is the only toy he threw away on his own. Heartbroken as a dad to see the failure of an entire 3 months of Christmas, and now 5 years later, that he could look through that entire basement and go, which toys do I want to get rid of? None of these, which I would point to 1,000 and go, you haven't played with this in years. He didn't care about any of that. He went to Megachomp and he said, I'm throwing that away. Oh, dagger to the heart. I told you it was sad. Thanks for listening to Wiggins America. I'll try to make next week a little happier. I don't know. Maybe not. Depends on the politics. We'll see you next time.
Nuts. Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.